You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
This is John Gobe from Starkiller Base, and you're listening to I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast.
Forgery of Imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15, reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
I rebel.
Welcome everyone to I Rebel. I am your host, Jedi Geek Girl. Joining me for this episode is the man himself behind Starkiller Base, John.
Hello there, I'm John Gobe from Starkiller Base. Nice to see everybody.
So before we get started, I want to say congratulations on your third place?
Technically third place, but people just usually say top four.
Well, third is better than four.
Yep, that's why I say third. So.
So before we get started talking about Star Wars Destiny, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I started playing cards back in the 90s. I played Overpower and then went to school and had kids and stuff and got back into Fantasy Flight Games stuff around when Conquest was released. I played Conquest and Thrones, and now I'm into Destiny. And I figured that I enjoy Destiny so much that I figured I'd make a YouTube channel and put out some videos and just try to do some good quality content, and I'm having a good time with that. I do it at my own pace, so I'm not putting out content as fast as other people, particularly ones that have multiple people for their YouTube channel or podcast or whatever, but I'm enjoying myself, and the community seems to like it, so that's me.
I have to say that it seems like you do put out a lot of content. It always seems like you're playing a new deck and trying out new matchup.
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, that's what it's all about for me is when I'm playing in a tournament, if I play a deck that, you know, is one of the tier one decks, quote unquote, then I generally try to play to win when I play in a tournament. But especially with the release of Empire at War, I'm trying to stay away from two-player Kylo FN because I have a feeling that an Errata is going to hit FN pretty hard and change that deck to maybe a two-player Kylo Phasma. But in the meantime, I'm really enjoying just trying other stuff. Like, the biggest thing for me was that Empire at War did not get spoiled super early. With Awakenings and with Spirit of the Rebellion, there was like a month or 2 months of people playing on TTS and playing tournaments and deciding what the best deck was even before the game was released, to the point where with those sets, you know, when the game came out and you got the cards in your hand day one, people were already building the, again, quote-unquote best decks, even though the game just came out. And so it really hurt the variety of decks in the meta that I found. And also, you know, a lot of the fun is experimenting. It's just, okay, let's take this card and let's build a deck around it to make it as effective as possible. Like, for example, like a Quinlan Vos deck where you just go Quinlan Vos with Ventress and just build on everything that makes people discard cards and you draw cards and just see if you can make this crazy Voltron deck where the special in Quinlan Vos does as much damage as possible. You know, that kind of stuff is fun to do. You know, so like I built a deck I call Fight Dirty, which is Elite Balateek, Elite Bazine, and Aguavian Enforcer. And admittedly, against Kylo, it probably gets wrecked pretty hard because it's mono yellow. But, you know, you can put Deadly on Bazine and you can play Fight Dirty and have like 8 dice come off and kill a guy in one shot. And it's just so much fun and there's so much cool stuff you can do with all the cards there. And it's a shame not to experiment with this stuff. So
I agree with that 100%. However, I have a little bit of a admission to make. With the release of Empire at War, I'm a little bit at loss because when Spirit of Rebellion came out, I already knew I was going to run Pomaz. With Empire at War, I knew that I was going to run Thrawn Unkar, but because the list wasn't spoiled so far in advance, it has me scrambling a little bit trying to figure out the deck.
Fair enough, yeah.
Which I think I am seeing around the field locally. People seem a little bit, I don't want to use the word lost, but doing a lot of discovering and trying to figure out what exactly makes decks tick and what they want to pursue.
Yeah, I mean, Thrawnkar is interesting because, you know, the character pairing can go multiple ways, right? Like, I have a Thrawnkar deck that is built, I like control. And Thrawnkar is as close to a pure control deck as you can get if you build it that way, which is cool. But it's really hard to build a effective pure control deck in a game like Destiny where aggro is king. So, you know, being able to build a Thrawn card deck where you might have a couple of Crime Lords to just, you know, reduce your opponent's options by killing off a guy, or you go for the buyout to mill him, or you do Detention Center with Prized Possession and just, you know, sort of, in a way, it's a choke deck. You're choking their resources, you're choking their upgrades, you're choking their character dice. If you can take away your opponent's options, you can lock them down and you can win that way. Hopefully not at time where you'll lose because you did less damage than them, but you know, you can build a Thrawn card deck where you put vehicles in, or you can put a Thrawn card deck where you put in the disruptor cannons on Thrawn if you wanted to, and just try to kill a guy that way, and it can definitely work. Yeah, I mean, like, the problem that you're saying is that you don't know what to do, and that's actually, to me, it's a good thing, because it means you can actually spend time experimenting with and discovering what the best choice is. And if somebody found the best way to build a Thrawn card deck, and then every time you played, somebody was playing Thrawn card, they had the same deck list, and, you know, the top four of every tournament was half Thrawn card all the time, which is what we've seen with, like, Funkar and Rainbow Nines and Pomaz and stuff like that. You know, I don't enjoy that, because I want to see variety. I want to see people being rewarded for blazing a trail and that sort of thing. And so people talk about a stale meta, and when you've got, like, you know, the top 16 of every Nationals having 9 decks that are the same deck or something like that, that to me is a stale meta. It happened in Conquest with Packmaster Kith, was like everywhere. Top 16 at Worlds 2 years in a row, I think 11 or 12 of the top 16 were all Kith decks. And so if you don't go to a tournament and play that particular deck, you might not make the top cut, which kind of stinks if you're trying to win it. So it's nice to have the freedom to choose what you want to play and still be able to do well with it.
You make a very solid point. I wish that is something that I was a little bit more experimental with when it came to decks. Unfortunately, I do not have a lot of time to experiment with different decks. That's why I like to work on one deck and tweak it and take it to the events I go, because I don't have time to experiment. But you mentioned Fight Dirty. What are some of the other decks that you've been playing with?
For Empire at War, I played around with a Palpatine a little bit, with just because I wanted to have Lead by Example and Darth Vader's Advanced TIE, or TIE Advanced, rather, because I think that would be hilariously good. It was all right. I mean, you get your Endurance and Indomitable and that sort of thing, which are cards that arguably you could say that they were built for Palpatine. That was all right. I mean, it's still Palpatine, and it's still vulnerable to die control, and I don't really enjoy that aspect of it, so I put that one on the back burner. But I've been playing a lot of Hera vehicles with Hera, Maz, and a rookie pilot, and it's actually rather effective. I was beating Kylo FN decks and Sabine Ezra decks and things like that, because you can just do some ridiculous stuff in there. Like, a lot of people go for Hera first, and I think that Maz is actually the threat in the deck. Say I have a Falcon out, which I actually legitimately got out, or even with Hera's ability, you put in Lead by Example on Maz, you roll her in, you roll in the Falcon because of Lead by Example, and then you can focus the Falcon to a 4, or if you hit like a 4 and a 1 on Maz, you just slap 5 into a person, they can't do anything about it. It's fantastic, it's a lot of fun. I did the Fight Dirty deck, which you can see on Starkiller Base. I played a game of that against Matt Cosino from the Chance Cube. I tried an Unkar deck that was vehicles, because I want to try the villain side of it. I know people play Hux with vehicles, but I just love Unkar. I love Imperial Inspection. I love his disrupt sides. Just love his ability to take, thematically and gameplay wise, you take the junk that you can't use and you turn it into money, which is fantastic. So I did single die Sienna Re with Elite Unkar, and you could try a TIE pilot, but I put in the two-player Phasma single die just for the extra hit points and the sides that are not modified and whatnot. And it was a lot of fun. I played it against a Hera Vehicles deck, and I would say that it's probably villain vehicles are designed to naturally be able to beat hero vehicles, simply because of things like the ATDP can get rid of a 2-cost support or less. So you can get rid of Rally Aid, you can get rid of Tech Team, you can get rid of the 2-cost speeder and that sort of stuff. And then, like, he had a Y-Wing that was giving me trouble, and I got my AT-ST out and just took out the Y-Wing with a special, and it can really set a person back if they're playing a vehicles deck. Of course, if you're not playing against the vehicles deck, the specials on those two do not very much. I built in a bunch of other decks in theory, like Pohara, just to see how that one would work. I haven't actually run it yet, and I've always loved It's a Trap. The biggest or the latest iteration of that one for me was Elite 2 player Poe with a Rebel Trooper and a Rookie Pilot, and it's actually a lot of fun. I'm actually really impressed with the 2 player Poe. His special is fantastic, and the double focus is really helpful. Although I wish that his die sides and his hit points were set to be the exact same as 2 player Phasma, and then make him a 9/13 as well, because that would open up so much more interesting deck building options for heroes. It's a shame that he's a 15 or something like that.
Cool.
2 player Poe.
Yeah, he is a 11/15.
So if you gave him 10 hit points and a single focus instead of a double focus, I would see them saying make it a 13, and then you're good. So that's more or less what I've been playing with. So
you mentioned Pohara. Can you give us an exclusive on your list?
Sure, yeah. Let me see. I've got it in my Star Wars Destiny DB, but I'm not very with clever names, so I just called it Pilot Buddies. because, I mean, basically it's Hera can put in vehicles, Poe can discard vehicles and potentially put them into play as well. So it's built basically like a vehicles deck. I had a couple lead by example because that card is just bonkers good for vehicles decks. And then it has like 17 supports, which are either vehicles or things that help you get vehicles in. And then 10 cards, which were basically all die control, because, I mean, you've only got 22 hit points with 2 characters. And in a mono red deck in a very heavy aggro meta, the dice in the deck aren't really, the character dice in the deck are not really there to necessarily kill people, although Poe's got some decent damage sides. So it's a matter of, it's a bit slower because you need to ramp into getting, you know, your Y-Wings and your Ghosts and things like that out. But I haven't played it yet. I wonder if maybe there's just not enough good red vehicles, because, you know, you got Black One and Ghost, which are both unique. And then aside from that, there's the T-47 Airspeeder and then the U-Wing and the Y-Wing. You know, Y-Wings are great when you got 3PO out because you can guarantee the special, and U-Wings are never a bad thing, but you're missing Falcons and that sort of thing, which I guess there isn't actually that many vehicles that are missing, because, I mean, aside from Quad Jumper and Falcon, there really isn't much else out there. So red does bring most of the goods there. So I can give you the deck list if you want to put it up on the podcast or whatnot.
Sure, that would be awesome. I think we can put that into our show notes and put it on the page as well.
Sounds fair.
So you talked about playing Unkar vehicles against Heroes vehicles. That seems to be a fun matchup.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was another one of the 3 games that Matt Cosino and I played. It's up on Starkiller Base right now. It was pretty interesting. I mean, I'm used to playing the Hera vehicles deck, so I'm used to seeing U-Wings and Y-Wings and that sort of stuff. And I really haven't spent much time with villain vehicles. So, like, I've never played a deck except for this one with Slave 1 in it, and never really bothered to try getting AT-STs out, and the Sonic Cannon is amazing. The interesting thing is that, aside from Sienna Ree's ability, there isn't really anything that says it has to be vehicles, so the Sonic Cannon can put in some work as well. You know, obviously, you lose pin down if you don't have another vehicle out, and Sienna Ree can't ready it, but aside from that, I mean, it's a really, really good card. It hurts a lot. If you watch the game, it's really interesting because I was trying to kill Maz first, because I know that in the Hera vehicles deck, Maz is the threat. And he ended up with, I can't remember, he had a shield on it, and he had Lone Operative. And I jokingly said, well, I guess I'm going to have to kill her in one shot, aren't I? Because, you know, every time she rolls in, she's basically going to heal 2. And then I ended up getting like 10 damage out and killing her in one shot, which I didn't plan to do, like, when I said that, but it really worked out that way. And interestingly enough, Matt had a really unconventional Hera vehicles deck list with things like Appraise and Draw Attention and that sort of thing. And I actually uncarded his hand 3 times and hit 0s every time, which I was not expecting to do against a vehicles deck. You're expecting to hit like a 3 or a 5 or something like that. But I still felt like I had enough money to do what I wanted, which was really good. So yeah, it was fun.
Whenever you sit across Maz, you pretty much have to kill her turn 1 as soon as possible, because the longer that she stays out on the board, the more important she becomes in the game because of her consistency. Not only that, but you want to kill her before you get, like, a little operative, a second chance on the board, or a field medic. Anything that would slow you down.
Well, that's the thing is, like, if you're playing in a deck where Maz is one of three characters or something like that, then she's definitely the threat. But, like, if you're looking at, a Mace Windu Maz deck, I'd much rather put eight damage into Mace and try to finish him off as quickly as possible, because Maz by herself is not much of a threat, particularly single die. Whereas, you know, if you put 8 damage into Maz and kill her, cool, but you just killed off, in that particular pairing, you've killed off the supporting character as opposed to the one that's like 22 points out of the 30. She's definitely a good support character, and she's definitely a good enabler of things like that. The biggest thing is she does do the consistency, but also it's the action cheating, right? Like, you know, when I'm rolling in a Falcon with Maz, with lead by example, you cannot mitigate my Falcon die because you don't get the chance to, right? Unless I roll in and miss focuses and don't hit range damage on the Falcon, in which case, good job.
It can happen. I mean, playing Pomaz, I've had that happen to me where you just don't roll anything.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And it is sad.
But I do agree with that. It's like, anytime Maz is single die, she pretty much isn't worth going for, especially with like partners like Mace Windu, where they're bigger threat. But she is still a very good card to have in your hero's deck, and her consistency cannot be underestimated.
Absolutely, and she can bring yellow to the table, or to your deck, I guess I should say, for a pretty cheap price too. Second lowest aside from Ezra now.
So you mentioned Mace Windu. Have you had a chance to play with Mace Windu yet?
Actually, no. I have been playing some Blue Hero, which I forgot to mention. I was actually playing Qui-Gon Kanan, which is really interesting. It's a fun deck. I like Qui-Gon Rey in Awakenings, but I just felt Rey was not very helpful. You know, like, you don't really need the Vibroknife action cheat sort of thing in that deck, because it's more shields and, you know, you're machine gunning your opponent to death with single shields and single damage, as opposed to trying to roll in a big 6 damage and take a guy out. So Kanan was really good, and man, he enables such interesting things. Like, I've got a focus out, let's say, and you roll in, you know, like, you're playing a range deck and you roll in 8 damage, I can go, okay, I'm going to play Force Misdirection, but before I do that, I'll trigger Kanan's ability to focus his second die to a gun, and then I'll wipe your board. Or, you know, I'm going to go, I've got like a 2 on Qui-Gon and a +2 on something, and I've got the focus on Kanan, and I go, I'm going to resolve melee damage, but before I do that, let me focus this other die to another 2 damage and kill a guy or something like that. It's a lot of fun, and it's really effective. So I was playing with that one, and then I recently built Kanan, Elite Kanan, with 2 Padawans, and that was actually really powerful as well. The problem, of course, is that Kylo from the 2-player box is just so good. He's so good against mono decks that it's just almost unfair in some cases. It's very, you know, you put yourself at a pretty, I want to say, a big disadvantage in playing a mono deck because of the fact that Kylo exists now, which is a shame. And actually, funny thing is, the Hera Vehicles deck is almost 33% of red, 33% yellow, 33% gray. It's pretty close. So it's actually difficult to call. Like, when I play against 2-player Kylo decks, they'll hit with Kylo maybe half the time, which is a heck of a lot better than 28 out of 30 cards being yellow.
I agree. I played against that matchup with Thrawn Unkar, and it was a fun game. And it is a deck to keep in mind if you are looking for a deck to play for fun in a meta that is not dominated by Kylo too.
Yeah, I was playing Thrawnkar around the time Canadian Nationals just to try it out. And I was doing a pretty good job. I mean, you know, like, when you're playing against a Vader deck or something like that, with Prize Possession and all the control you've got and a Detention Center, Vader just gets absolutely crippled. And then I had a friend play 2-player Kylo with 2-player Phasma into me, similar to a Kylo FN deck, but it had Holocrons and Captain Phasma's Blaster and stuff, and I played 3 games against him, and Unkar was dead, like, first turn, or had 2 hit points left on the second turn, and I just got destroyed. And I noticed that in the particular build I was using, almost every card in the deck was yellow. Because, I mean, the only thing you didn't have, you know, like for reds, you might have Feint and the best defense and Imperial Inspection, but almost everything else was yellow because that's where all the mill stuff is. And it made it really susceptible to two-player Kylo, which hurt pretty bad.
Not only that, but all the best control is yellow. Besides the best defense, red hardly has any control. There is some decent control in gray, which is nice to include in Thrawn Unka. But Kylo is one of those meta-warping cards where you almost have to build your deck with Kylo in mind, not to lean too much towards one color, otherwise you become very susceptible to Kylo's ability.
And with things like, what's it called, Force Visions, the zero-cost ambush, you look at your opponent's hand. I mean, people, you can play that in Kylo and take a look at the person's hand and go, okay, well, he's got four cards that are blue and one that is yellow, so let me go ahead and call blue when I roll in. And, you know, you can even do it with Feint and do it twice and that sort of thing. And it can get real ugly. The Kylo decks I've actually faced against, I haven't played in many tournaments since Canadian Nationals, so there haven't, I think there's been like two maybe little casual tournaments with Empire at War stuff, so I haven't personally experienced the whole Kylo FN winning everything, and I'm glad for that. But the Kylo decks that I have seen actually ran anger in them, and so you get these situations where Kylo rolls in with Feint, he does a damage from anger, he does two damage from his ability, he readies, and then he rolls in again. And one time my opponent had two angers on him, and you know, obviously Kylo's gonna die faster because of it, but the damage that he can do is ridiculous. Like, you activate Kylo and you can do four damage from those cards, and then you've got your dice and your upgrades on your other characters and all that sort of stuff, and it's brutal.
So that brings us to a interesting question, kind of. When FN gets hit, who do you think is the better partner for Baby Phasma? Would you say it's Kylo too, or would you say it's Baby Vader?
That's a tough call. I mean, I think that Kylo is more consistent and, you know, less dependent upon things like Emperor's Throne Room. I would probably say that Kylo Phasma is the better deck to Vader Phasma. They both suffer from the same problem, which is that basically all of the good die control in red and blue is spotted blue character for the most part. When you build a deck where, you know, you have all these spotted blue character cards, but the character that most people are going to kill first or should kill first is the blue character and the only blue character in your deck, then if they die early, you're done for, right? Like, you have Phasma sitting there, you got a Holocron in hand, and you've got Isolation and, you know, something else. There's just only so much you can do at that point. So you end up having to run things like Feel Your Anger because it didn't have Spot of Blue, or Dug In, or things like that, which, you know, Dug In has the same problem as every other shield card where in some decks you're just going to get Vibroknife right through them. But I find that there's a lot of Cad Phasma and Sabine, Ezra, Sabine, Akbar, two-player Poe, Sabine, whatever it is, where there's a lot of range damage that you can't mitigate because of the action cheating, and Dug In and Personal Shield and that sort of thing. Personal Shield in Thronkar is incredibly useful against those decks, but it's next to useless against other decks. So it's a tough call, but I mean, that's what happens when you play in a meta that has variety in it, I guess.
I think, in my opinion, when it comes to which one to pair with Baby Phasma, it all depends what you're going for. I think Baby Vader is more aggressive and can hit higher. However, he is more fragile with less hit points, plus he does damage to himself with his ability. With Kylo, you have a higher damage ceiling, but you're not guaranteed that 2 extra damage. So it all depends on what you're looking for your aggressive build. I think if I was building the deck, I would probably go with Kylo Phasma just because of the sustainability that Kylo brings to the table compared to the aggressive high numbers, high damage output that Baby Vader has.
Yeah, I was playing against a guy who was running Kylo Phasma with Emperor's Throne Room. And, I mean, obviously Throne Room works well with Phasma, but also Crossguard Lightsabers with lightsaber pull are ridiculous. Like, you play it out on Kylo, there's 1 damage. And then if you hit the special, it's 3 damage if the character has 1 or more shields, or 2 damage without them. So, I mean, obviously, in a sense, you're mixing damage types because you've, well, obviously you've got melee and range, but you've also got the specials. So, you know, a lot of the emo kids, Anakin, Phasma kind of decks, they try to merge themselves together by having specials on almost every card and every character and every die and that sort of thing. So you could argue that specials is the primary damage type of the deck, whereas with Kylo Phasma, you're sort of splitting it three ways, which is less good, but the damage output on Kylo is so good, and with Phasma is so good that in some cases it just doesn't matter.
So we are a month into Empire at War. What are your thoughts about it so far? Do you have any afterthoughts about it, or is it too soon for you to draw any conclusions about the set at large?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like if there's an errata upcoming, which I hear that there is, you know, nerfs, FN, and personally I don't really care about Rey all that much, but I think that maybe Poe could go back to vehicles only, or Maz could be her character and upgrade dice to make it a bit less, like, I'm ready for Poe Mask to be gone because it's just fundamentally, you know, breaks all the rules. If you ignore that, I think that Destiny is in the best place it's been. And I think that there's a lot of good decks that can win. And I really like the Empire War set. It's very well balanced. It's got a lot of fun cards in it. Whether you're playing casual or in a tournament, there's a lot of fun decks to play. But the weird thing about the set for me is that it's not that exciting. I'll explain what I mean by that. Is in Awakenings, you had holdout blasters, which were, you know, you open a pack and you can get like a card that's $20 or something like that, even if it's not a legendary. In Spirit of the Rebellion, there was Vibroknives, which is your, again, you don't hit a legendary, but you get this and you're happy. And then you come into Empire at War, and what is there, like a scatter blaster or something like that is taking its place that no one's going to play? You know, the legendaries are cool and they're fun to play with, but they're not all that revolutionary. Like, you look at Mace, and it's like, okay, so he's basically like Luke, but slightly different. And he's like Obi-Wan, but slightly different. Which is cool, because now I have some variety. But, you know, there's nothing fundamentally groundbreaking in these things. You know, people get, like, a ghost, and they say, okay, cool, I can play that in the one deck that people play that uses it right now. You know, so if you're not getting ancient lightsabers or don't need an ancient lightsaber, then, you know, it's not all that exciting to open a box because you could just get the rares that you needed to build the deck you wanted, which I guess is a good thing, right? When you were playing the other sets and all the cards that you needed for all your sets, like Vibroknives and Holdout Blasters and the legendaries were really expensive, it was a lot more difficult to get in there and build the decks you want unless you just, you know, jumped in and bought like four boxes or all the singles you needed for countless dozens of dollars or whatever. So on the one hand, it's cool because you don't really, like, I find that this set is the one where the legendaries, they add the least to it. Like, ancient lightsabers are cool, but they're not game-breakingly good. They're just, you know, another weapon which can add a bit of survivability to a character, which is cool, but eh. And then, you know, like, if you're not playing Thrawn Car or some weird other Thrawn deck, you don't really need Thrawn. And K2SO is, you know, like all these elite 20 point hero characters, I'm kind of getting tired of them. I you know, Sabine is interesting and cool, and her deck is very powerful, but, you know, like, you got Luke and you've got Sabine, you got K2SO and you got Obi-Wan and you got Mace now, and it's all just, okay, I'm going to invest most of my points in this one character, and then I can put in like an 8 or a 9 or a 10 for my second character. And as soon as my main character that has 10 or 12 hit points dies, then the other character is up the creek without a paddle. And it's just, you know, yes, the deck is different if you happen to have a red character like K2SO versus two blue characters, but it's all fundamentally the same in that sense. And I don't know, I find those particular kinds of decks a little bit boring, I guess, at this point. So I like being able to do the five dice and the four dice, three character lists, and just try things that are kind of not aggro mainstream stuff.
I think what you are bringing up is something that is common with a lot of people in the game. It's something that they are also drawing as a conclusion. Despite that, we know an FHQ is coming. Before we wrap up, I would like to touch upon that because we are about a month and change after the set has been officially released, but we still don't have an FHQ. What do you think about that?
From what I've heard from Facebook and talking to people and stuff is that they're basically waiting for the Nationals season to end before putting out an FAQ, which I guess is cool. I mean, you can always put out the FAQ now and just have the effective date to be the date of the last Nationals, and that way people can start chaining their decks or thinking about how it's going to affect the game and that sort of thing, whereas if they put in an FAQ and go, like, regional season's coming, right? So Nationals is all well and good, and they'll be over, and then you're going to be going into regionals and legacies and that sort of stuff, and it'll be nice to have an FAQ going into that because, frankly, without the FAQ, the old stuff is still arguably better than the new stuff, which isn't a very good thing when we've already been playing it and winning with it for the past 3-4 months. If they don't FAQ stuff, I would say that Pomaz is still an incredibly strong deck. And I don't like playing it. I played it for my first door championship and won with it. And then I said, okay, I've done my Pomaz thing. I'm done. I don't want to play it anymore. And I don't really want to play against it either because it's just one of those things where it's like, it doesn't matter how good a player you are. When you're playing against it, if they get their thermals and they hit the specials or their hit and runs or whatever, you just sit there and you're dead. You can get the best draws and good rolls, and it doesn't matter because as long as the Pomaz player is consistent and pulls up the cards that they need at the right times, then you're just more or less done. And it's kind of unfortunate that that's the case because it's not particularly fun. I mean, it's fun to do, you know, when you double thermal somebody, it's fun to do, definitely. Like, I was at Gen Con, my buddy went down there, and he's the world champion and at the time the North American champion for Armada, which obviously is a different game, but, you know, he's a very strong player in all the games we play in. And he goes into, I think it was round 4 or something like that, a Swiss. He's playing Phasmagwavian Trooper at the time. He runs into Pomaz. The Pomaz player, first action, hit and run, rolls in double special, resolves double thermal. Okay, 6 damage across the board. And then he did, I think he rolled in Maz and did 2 damage and or 1 damage, finished off the first order Trooper. Next turn, hit and run again, rolls in, U-Wing special, and I think it was a 3-for-1 on Poe. And basically, he was dead. The whole board was just gone. Like, that's enough damage to kill Phasma with the 3, and the U-Wing, you know, more or less killed the Guavi, and it was just ridiculous to the point where my friend actually decided that he may not be playing Destiny anymore because he doesn't like the fact that there are games where this can happen. They're like, it's not going to happen often, but the fact that it can happen where you have no interactivity is just, what are you going to do about it, right? It's not fun.
I don't think that that problem is exclusive to Pomaz. I think FN also shares that. And I think that is why a lot of people are wanting the FHQ to come. So when the FN nerf comes down the ladder, it can change up the meta because people are getting tired of playing it the same, if not more so, than Pomaz. But I think without an FHQ, there are a lot of cards left to the interpretation instead of being clarified. And I'm noticing a lot of that in my local game, where we have to guess how a card is resolved, how the effect actually applies to the game. I don't think we really need it right now because it's not like there's a whole lot going on outside of Nationals. But without a official FHQ, you almost have to wonder if these official events were kind of like flying blind without rulings on certain cards.
Absolutely. Like with things like Coercion, right? When Coercion was announced and we saw it, it looked amazingly fun. Like, without the ruling where you can pass and just basically pause Coercion, the card is really exciting and it's kind of effective. I mean, a lot of the stuff, you can play it and you can see no events that your opponent can afford to play, or some that they can't play because they don't have whatever, like a blue character alive or whatever it is. But then we get some guy saying, oh, I talked to Lucas and here's the ruling, and, you know, okay, great, you talk to Lucas, that's fantastic, but there's nothing official from it. So are they using that ruling for Nationals when people play it? You know, it is like FAQs are a big deal. Like, I'm looking forward to the errata, definitely, But the card clarifications are very important too. Especially, like, you look at how they changed the definition of focus to make my allies the Force more effective, or function as intended, or whatever happens to be the case, you know, whatever you want to call it. Things like that were really cool and really useful. And without that, people are, like, if you're playing a Nationals level of event with no official ruling on some of these cards, like, that's just bad form, frankly.
Yeah, I hope we get it soon, because I know I have a lot of questions I would like answered.
Sure.
Bringing us to a close, before we let you go, I would like to address some feedback from our Facebook page. The first feedback we have is from Jimmy. He asked the question, as a limited budget casual player, where do you find the most value? Singles? Two-player box sets? Starter plus boosters? Or perhaps something else?
Well, I will admit, I am coming from an LCG background, which is living card games, where I'm used to just having a full playset of everything. With Destiny, I've basically just gotten a full playset of everything, so I don't really have a personal perspective on it. But I would say that in this current state, getting a couple two-player box sets is a really good springboard to get into the game, because Ray less so, but the other three characters are absolutely fantastic and can form the fundamental basis for a lot of really good, strong decks. And, I mean, if you go from there, you don't really need that many legendaries to build some interesting decks. So if you're staying away from vehicles that have lots of legendary vehicles in it, you can just buy a couple of two-player box sets and then buy some singles to build a deck that you want with those characters as the basis for it. Kylo Phasma is a great deck. You'll have to get some cards in there to support it, and in that case, buying singles would be good, especially since, like, the biggest thing is a lot of decks have cards from all three sets, right? So, or three sets and the two-player box, I guess you could say. So you can't really just go, let's buy 10 boosters from this set and I'll be fine. You sort of go, okay, well, let's see. I would suggest that once you get into the game and you've seen some of the characters and how they play, or, you know, borrowed a deck from somebody, you take a look at the kind of deck that you want to play, and then you get the cards in the most cost-effective way you can to build the deck, right? Like, you, Amanda, played Pomaz, right? You could have just said, okay, I'm going to play Pomaz, buy all the singles to get Pomaz, and just play Pomaz. And if you want to buy a few more singles to tweak the deck as you go, great. And, you know, like, there are people that have every card and have a full playset of them, and still, particularly for store championship seasons or national seasons or whatever, play one deck, even though, like, 90% of their cards are sitting in their binders doing nothing. If that's the case, then just buy the deck that you want, that you think will do best, and run with it.
I have to second that. Jimmy, if this is your first adventure into the game, I would recommend buying two-player boxes. You have Kylo Phasma. Right out of the box, you have a good solid deck. Then you can buy singles to help improve the deck, because the deck by itself, using only the contents of the two-player box set, is still really good. So it doesn't take much to improve it.
Yeah, exactly. You get, you know, get a new battlefield, get rid of droid commandos, and put something cheaper in, and go from there.
But if you are looking to build a deck from scratch, your best value is to buy singles instead of hoping that you pull what you want from booster packs.
Sure, and the biggest problem with the two-player boxes is that there's no yellow cards in there. So if you're looking for yellow decks, then two-player box sets not going to help you at all.
Moving on to a second person, Mattis would like us to discuss why villain seems to be on top all the time. Is it the raw damage they get, or is it too complicated to make heroes tricksters work?
Well, I think that, like, the design standpoint for MFG is that villains have, they just do damage. They're, you know, they do damagey stuff. Heroes have more shields and more ways to heal themselves and things like that, which is good. But the problem is that damage is just so strong in the game that if you can play a side that has more damage, you're more likely to win because it's that much more powerful. But on top of that, you look at things like, say you go Luke Maz and Vader Raider, just to have comparable decks, right? Vader rolls in, and they both got similar die sides, but the number of times where you roll in Luke and you get like a blank and a shield and you just cry, or, you know, Vader rolls in the two disrupts and a shield and you just go, man, I want to kill something. I want to do damage. What's going on with this? But the thing is that the villains have cards that give them consistency, like Force Strike and Bait and Switch and that sort of thing, whereas for the hero side, you have to hit a good side in order to be able to take advantage of it. Less so now with My Ally is the Force, I guess, because you can hit the focus side, but that only enables one more side, and it also costs two, which is a big deal. You know, there is a lot of consistency in the villain side. And then if you look at cards like, the prime example for me is Lothcat versus He Doesn't Like You. You know, you look at that and it just, I realize it's apples and oranges, but oh my goodness. Like, I read Lothcat and I said, when I first came out, and I said, this can't be right. He Doesn't Like You is, I remove my worst die to get rid of your best die. And Lothcat is, I remove your best die and you get to choose and remove my best die. They cost the same, but one is way better than the other. I mean, you know, if you're looking to remove your opponent's best die, they both do that. But the cost, quote in quotes here, is they're both one die, but your worst die versus your best die. And that's a big difference.
And here's why I think villain cards are that way. I think it is thematically appropriate that the villain cards are quote-unquote stronger and quote-unquote better, because thematically, evil is always easier than heroes. So by definition, being a hero is going to be challenging and harder than it is to be the villain. So obviously your villain decks are going to be a lot stronger because it is a lot easier to hate something and be aggressive than it is to be calm, relaxed, and conduct your actions through well thought out plans instead of just going ruthless aggression.
That's true. If you look at it from a theme standpoint, villains have all the money and they've got all the equipment, and the rebels are just, you know, scraping by to build stuff like the professor from Gilligan's Island with coconuts and stuff like that. And that's good thematically, but the problem is half of the people that like Star Wars like, well, let's just say it's 50-50. Some people love the Empire, some people like rebels, right? And while it is interesting to play a game where playing as the rebels kind of feels like playing as the rebels because you are, you know, you're the underdog, in a competitive game, making half of your game the underdog is not a very good way to design a competitive game. Hopefully it balances out a bit more, but I mean, like, when you look at the SOR meta and you see heroes is Pomaz and villains is like, here's nine decks that do well, it's kind of disappointing, especially when you've got people like, I've got a few buddies in the Toronto area where they wanted to play Destiny but didn't want to spend all the money on it, so what they did was they split boxes with their friends, and one guy went all heroes and one guy went all villains, and the hero guys are kind of disappointed with how the breakdown has been lately. Empire War is changing that a bit, but I mean, still, like, you look at hero decks and, you know, there's Kanan decks, there's Sabine decks, and there's maybe a Hera Vehicles deck, which might be effective. But other than that, you know, there's not that many things that have been discovered yet. Hopefully that'll change.
I like what heroes are doing, but because their decks rely a little bit more on tricks compared to villains, it is tricky, pun intended, to get those decks exactly right. And I think over time, heroes' decks will develop to a point where that gap should close a lot better.
The other thing about playing a tricksy deck is that it is harder to play, which makes it less likely to win in the average player's hands. And also, when you're playing it in a big tournament like Worlds or Gen Con or Nationals or something like that, it's harder to consistently play a deck that requires more thought than other decks, simply because it's a marathon, right? Like, you're gonna be using your mental energy more than someone who's playing a less complex deck and having to make less decisions or easier decisions, and it makes it harder for someone to win with it. So that does give you a bit of a disadvantage there, unfortunately.
And with that, we would like to wrap this episode up. Thank you, John, for coming on and talking some Destiny with me.
No problem. I had fun.
If people would like to contact you, where can they find you?
Well, I'm available on Facebook, on the Starkiller Base Facebook page, which is facebook.com/StarkillerBaseDestiny. And then basically the other place is YouTube, which is youtube.com/StarkillerBaseDestiny. And, I mean, it's harder to communicate through YouTube, obviously, than Facebook. So Facebook would probably be the prime choice for that. So definitely, if you want to ask me something or just chat, then that's where you can find me.
That concludes this episode of I Rebel. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you all next time. This has been I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast. I have been your host, Jedi Geek Girl. If you would like to contact me, please send me an email at irebeldestiny@gmail.com. And as always, may the Force be with you. I Rebel is an independent podcast, not associated with Lucasfilm, Disney, Fantasy Flight Games, or any other organization. All copyrights for Star Wars, Star Wars Destiny, and all other properties belong to the proper copyright holders.